Heaven. How often do you think of heaven? Future home of the overcomers. Future home of the immortals. When we say future home, we're talking about our future home. I intend to spend more time there in heaven than I do in New London, Connecticut. So why should I occupy my time all with New London, Connecticut, when I'm going to spend more time up there? How badly, friends, do you want to go to heaven? How badly do you want to see God? Are you one that says, "Oh, I'll go if somebody will take me"? You know, just like conventions. I'll go to the convention if somebody will take me. You know, I like the word convention, but to me it really falls short. I like to think of a convention like this as a spiritual journey. We're on a journey, friends. And if you think we're just going to Pittsburgh or Johnston at the University of Pittsburgh, you've missed it. You missed it. This is a rung in the ladder on your way to heaven. You know, that's the way you should see this. Another rung. Can I climb it? Will it help me? Will it move me closer to where I want to go? If you say, "I'm going to a convention," it doesn't have that same power. Oh, yes, I accept it. I use the term convention, but we're on a spiritual journey. That's the reason why I try to go as many conventions as I can, because there are rungs in the ladder to where we want to go. How badly do you want to see God? Oh, it could be the person that says, "Well, let me take a look at my calendar, see if I could fit it in." I find myself doing that. But the question begs an answer. How badly do you want to see God? Are you willing to give up everything, everything you got, for that experience? I am. I'm ready to give up everything. You know, friends, God will give you everything you want, anything you want. Name it. God will give it to you. Now, this is an awesome idea, provided you give him what he wants. That's the key. He'll give you anything you want, provided you give him what he wants. You want immortality? He will give it to you, provided you give him what he wants. You want to see him face to face? He will allow it, provided you give him what he wants. You want a heavenly home? He will give it to you, provided you give him what he wants. This is the whole philosophy of covenants. This is the basic principle, whether you're talking about the Adamic covenant, the Edenic covenant, the Noahic covenant, the Davidic covenant, the law covenant, the grace covenant, the new covenant, the covenants of the future, a million years from today, whatever covenant you're talking about, the basic principle is we have terms. You give me what I want and I'll give you what you want. You know, as I think about that, do you know when you commit yourself to God, God commits himself to you? He restricts his freedom. Think about that. He restricts his freedom when he says, "I'll make a covenant with you." What kind of a God do we have that is ready to give you what you want if you give him what he wants and he restricts his freedom? You want a divine nature? Then you must conform to divine principles. I mean, it's as simple as that, friends. You want a divine nature? You're living the divine principle. Are you living divine principles? If you say no, Then why should you expect divine nature? This is a powerful thought about our God, and it's something that very few people understand. You know, we say God is our Father, and He is, and we regard ourselves as sons. But some people have raised the question, who's our mother? If God is our Father, who's our mother? Well, when you talk like that, you're talking about the human progenitors, and we cannot talk like that with God. But if you want a parallel, I'll give you a parallel. Our covenant is our mother. The covenant you have with God is our mother, and God is our Father. And the two of them will give us that immortality. What do you know about your future home? What do you know about where we're going to live in the ages to come? And I'm so delighted because you and I, we're all one family. We're all going to be together. And more so than our earthly families. I have been spending more time with you than I have with my own natural family. I remember my oldest brother one time called me up and he says, Paul, he says, we haven't seen you in months. And he says, we forgot what you look like. I says, I'll send you a photograph. I intend to be with you in the ages to eternity. I won't be with my family because they're not in the truth. And so we are developing relationships now that will cover eternity, friends. That prospect in itself is a very, very sobering and a very powerful idea. I make no apologies for my obsession with the stars and with the universe and with heaven. I'm fascinated with it. I study it. I collect all kinds of thinking about it. It dominates my thinking. I pursue any leads that give me a greater understanding of it. After all, it's my future home. I expect to spend more time there than I have in any other place in my life. But the real reason for my obsession with heaven is that God lives there. And I want to see God. If there is a goal in my life, that's it. If there is a vision, that's the ultimate vision. The question of our future life is not merely a biblical inquiry or a philosophical investigation or a convention discussion. It's a question of our future existence, a question of a new home, a new life, a new area. And those of you who have the right spirit will desire to know, what has the Lord in reservation for His people? It will be beyond our imagination, 1 Corinthians 2:9, which says, the eye hath not seen nor heard what God has in reservation for those who are His. Atheists say that heaven is an illusion to spiritually intoxicated people. And you know, there's nobody that talks more about God and heaven than the atheists. Scientists say heaven is not knowable, could be, yet it could not be. We must research it. Yet Stephen Hawking, who is the number one guru in science today, occupying the Isaac Newton chair at Oxford University, he quotes Isaiah all the time about the universe of universes parallel to heavens of the heavens. Most Christendom believe in heaven as a future home. They believe it. They're looking forward to it. But nobody wants to die to get there. I'm going to make some suggestions about our future home. But never am I dogmatic about this. some suggestions, because we do have some insight about our future home. The word heaven is from the Hebrew shamayan, or the Greek orianos. And there's five applications to the word heaven. There's the physical heaven, which is Genesis 7:11. This is the region encompassing the globe, what we call the atmosphere. So the scriptures often say the heavens is referring to the atmosphere. This is where millions of birds fly and billions of raindrops fall, where thousands of airplanes fly, and so forth. And this was the atmosphere that was created in the second day. This is not God's heaven, but it's referred to as heaven. Then there's the second application of these words, and that is the starry heaven. This is beyond the Earth's atmosphere, the 100 billion black holes that keep each galaxy cohesive and perpetual, and the 6 trillion stars that are associated with these galaxies. And this then, with the 6 trillion planets that are associated, this is the visible universe. This is what the psalmist said, "The heavens declare the glory of God." But it's a visible universe, friends. That's important. The starry heaven is a visible universe. If you could see a star, you're not in God's heaven. Because it's visible. It's human. It's related to the human senses. God's heaven is not visible. Then there's a third definition of heaven referred to in 2 Corinthians 12, 2-4. This is where Paul was transported to the third heaven to see and hear things which he was not permitted to reveal. We believe this to be the third dispensation of the plan of the ages. Paul was given insights into the third dispensation. Oh, I wish I had those insights. Don't you? I mean, we do have scriptures that give us some insights. I think Ernie today, this morning, was giving some insights. But I think he was given more than insights. I think he was given a lot of details. But he was prevented from sharing it. Now, we term this heaven to indicate it's the ruling features of Christ's kingdom. Now, this is not God's heaven, but referred to as heaven. Then there's the fourth definition of heaven as the ecclesiastical heaven. This is where Satan dwells. The ecclesiastical heaven is not on a star or a planet. It's not somewhere in the galaxies, nor is it inside the earth, internal to the earth, known as the fiery hell. You know, that's an interesting discussion talking about Tartarus that Peter talks about. Where is Tartarus? Is it inside the earth? Is it in the planet? You know where Tartarus is, friends? Right here on the surface of the earth. That's where Satan is with all his fallen angels. He's among us. Not here. We've got guardian angels around here. But I'm talking about, where is the fallen angels? On the surface of the earth. And I can't wait until the future when we find out just exactly how his influence was with the human race. Some have said he's just above the Vatican. I'm not going to argue with that point. The ecclesiastical heavens has control of the earth, and the celestial city of Revelation 21 says it comes down out of God's throne to replace the ecclesiastical control of the God of this world. The celestial city is referred to as the new heavens. The new heavens. But it, like all others, is not heaven of where God dwells. The fifth and final application of heaven refers to God's throne. This is the invisible heaven. This beyond the naked eyes, beyond the physical, beyond the starry heavens, it is where God and his angels live. This is the location of God's throne, Isaiah 66:1. This is when we pray, "Our Father, which art in heaven," Matthew 6:9. It's the location where the angels ascend and descend on divine errands. This is the heaven that Jesus ascended to in his resurrection, Acts 1:11. This is the heaven where God lives and often referred to as the heaven of the heavens. Let's look into this heaven of heavens, God's throne. Let's start the question, where is this heaven? Of course, you might say, heaven is away from the earth. Of course. Heaven is up, you might say. Jesus left the earth, he ascended up. Ephesians 4:8-11. Angels said Jesus was taken up. Acts 1:11. The church will be caught up. 1 Thessalonians 4:17. God sees his creatures, he looks down. Psalms 53:2. When John had visions of heaven, it was up. The angel said to come up. Revelation 4:1. When the new Jerusalem is ready, it comes down. Now, if you go up from China and you go up from New England, you're going to end up at different locations. But Isaiah 14:13 speaks of God in the north parts. But north is a compass direction. It's not a position or a location. It's just a direction. This is north. Here's a position of north. 10 feet is another position. And another 50 feet, so he's anywhere infinitely up to the direction of a compass north. But Isaiah 14:13 speaks of God in the north part, but says it's beyond the starry heavens. Let me share with you some of the reasoning here. Because in Isaiah 14:13, Lucifer was speaking. And Lucifer says, "I will exalt myself above the stars of God." Above, beyond the stars of God. Suggesting God's presence is beyond the stars. And second, God's heaven is spiritual and therefore invisible, not seen with the naked eye. The stars, the galaxies, the meteors, the constellations are all natural, invisible. To put God in that context is to make God visible as well. And we cannot do that. The third reason, God has put a seal around the stars. Read it in Job 9:7. As to suggest a definite containment and a separation of the visible elements from the invisible elements. Fourth and final reason for God's throne to be beyond the stars is coming from science. Scientists are saying there's a universe beyond our universe. Our universe is a subset of a total universe. Our universe is a part of a totality. And Stephen Hawking, the leading Nobel physicist, speaks of the universe as being part of another universe with a biblical expression from Isaiah 14:13, heavens within the heavens. Incidentally, Hawking is trying to find the origin of the universe. He's trying to find out where did it all begin. Now, friends, this is very sobering. The opportunity to enter a spiritual world requires we penetrate the seal around the physical world. And God is giving us an opportunity to penetrate that seal that separates the physical from the spiritual. It will be a lost opportunity if we don't take advantage of it now. But heaven is more than a place, it's a condition. Heaven is a spiritual condition. Jesus said this in John 14:23. "In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you." And the many mansions here refers to the level and type of spiritual lives that exist in God's heaven. But the heaven of the little flock is a condition of a divine nature. the same nature that God has. This is the nature of immortality. 1 Timothy 6:16 tells us, "Who only hath immortality, dwelling in the light which no man can approach, which no man hath seen nor can see." Now, if you note this text, it gives us insight into the nature of immortality. I'm sure you've raised the question, what is immortality? I want immortality. I'm looking forward to immortality. This is a promise. This is a part of my covenant with God. I want immortality, and I'm ready to give Him what He wants. Incidentally, you know what He wants? He wants everything you got. That's what's going to cost you, by the way, if you want immortality. He's not interested in part-time payment or temporary installment plans. He wants your total life all the time. It's a tremendous cost, but the benefit is just awesome. What is this immortality? 1 Timothy 6:16 gives us a little insight. We can expect light, for God is light. God is immortality. But what is light? Do we know something about light? Yes, light is energy. Light is energy. Self-contained, independent energy. And by definition, immortal beings are beings with independent energy. You don't depend on anything. You don't require any sustenance. Immortal life, you cannot die, because death means you have lost your energy. Immortal ones live in a self-perpetuating energy life cycle, like the galaxy with the black holes that perpetuates itself, never burns out. Hydrogen is transformed to helium, and helium transformed back again, and it's perpetual. And I was so delighted this past week to read up on a new research that's being conducted that was exciting. And I'll share it with you. As you all know, that Einstein said that if we ever reached the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second, if we reached that, our matter would be changed to energy. Right, Jim? We would change our matter to energy. But nowhere did Einstein say, are there various speeds of energies? The photon, can the photon of energy go faster than other photons of energy? This is a new theory that's just been announced. And I'm delighted to see two scientists say, yes, it is. But friends, do you know what that means? It means they're beginning to see that in the spiritual world, if we then assume that the spirit being is a form of energy of some kind, which we're not sure of, if it is, that there are different speeds that these spiritual energies can contain. I like this. I'm hoping it goes somewhere that gives us more insight into the spiritual world. Immortal creatures have a self-perpetuating cycle that once started in a cycle of energy, it returns to the same state. Mortal creatures have the power to live eternally, but depend on an outside source as an energy dependent. Death is a possibility with mortal creatures. Man must eat and drink, or he will die. It's interesting, when we go down to the cafeteria to eat, are we really avoiding death? You know, if you go down there and watch the brethren, just watch the way they eat, you say, yes, they are avoiding death. But, you know, what's that all about? What's that eating all about? It's replacing your energy, meaning you're mortal. If you don't do that, you're going to die. So the immortal people don't have to do that. They don't have to replace their energy, because they have a self-perpetuating life cycle of energy within. Scriptures speak of immortality as a prize for the overcomers. This is Philippians 3:14 and 1 Corinthians 15:53. I'm looking forward to being immortal. I hope you are. And Romans 2:7 encourages us to seek immortality. Go after it. Remember what Paul says? To them who with patience seek glory, honor, and immortality. Pursue it. It's the greatest pursuit that one can have. The immortal ones will constitute a new divine family. The immortal ones would be a new creation in the universe. The immortal ones will be the initiator of a whole new series of innovations. And when I think about the 16 planets that has been theorized surrounding these stars, can you imagine the tremendous creativity that's going to be required? And we believe that Jesus and His church, Jesus and His body, Jesus and the elect class will embark once that kingdom and reconciliation is complete. They will embark on programs of creativity to fill up these 6 trillion planets. What a mind-boggling idea that is. And I think we should have that vision, because the vision is indicated in the Scriptures. The immortal ones, what a mind-boggling idea that is, and to think that we can possess it is awesome. And we would make another suggestion to you, and again, this is just a suggestion. This comes from the pyramid understanding. If you remember, in the king's chamber, in the pyramid, is made up of red granite, granite symbolizing divine nature. But it had 4 construction stones at the top deck. And if you look at those 4 construction stones, there were 5 compartments. So we believe that there are 5 compartments, but 4 levels. Now, if God is on top and no one else at that stage, then we would suggest that the remaining levels are levels of the divine nature. And that fits in very nicely with God's creation, because God, in the mineral world, has 4 levels. The vegetable world, He has 4 levels. The fleshly world, He has 4 levels. The spiritual world has 4 levels too. And if these creative acts of God hold true, we would suggest that there are 4 levels to the divine nature. Have you ever reflected what God is like? What can we expect about Him as a being? After all, His nature, His divine nature, will be the nature of the little flock. The more we know about God's nature, the more we are looking at the nature we will have if we are successful. Can we expect to see an old man with a beard sitting on a throne chair? Can we expect to see a being with 2 arms and 2 legs, a mouth and a stomach? Can we expect to see a human apparition that reminds us of someone we know? I can hardly say these words, for that's not what we can expect. God is not in human form, so let's not perceive Him that way. And we must never, never, never project the human nature into God. That's the reason why the 10 commandments, the first commandment was specified that way. Thou shalt not make no other gods before Me. Jesus told us in Luke 24:39, the Spirit does not have flesh and bones as ye see Me have. Even Ezekiel's first chapter. Can we expect 4 living creatures like birds with wings and the heads of animals? This was the vision that Ezekiel had. And John the Revelator, in the 4th chapter of Revelation, he said the same thing. These are literal things and things that we know of, but can we expect God to have those literal features? Of course not. God used these visions to convey symbolically what the divine nature is all about. But let's not adopt these features as literal. They're just simply a way to communicate. But what else do we know about God? Let's talk about it. God has a face. Matthew 18:10. He has a face. Angels behold the face of the Father all the time. Now, if God has a face, he must have other parts or other aspects. Moses saw his back part. But we have learned that the human vocabulary and language fails to accurately describe God. Note when Ezekiel and John described the visions of God, they used cautious terms like, it appears this way. It was like, or as it were. Jesus came the closest in describing God. The closest. If you really want to know what God was like, look at Jesus, because Jesus says, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. I like to think that every one of us who believe we're in the elect class will have to say the same thing. Can you say that, brethren? Can you go about saying to others, like Jesus said, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father? If you say no, there's a question of godliness in your nature. We can expect God to be emotional. Psalms 2:4, God laughs. God laughs. In Psalm 7:11, God gets angry. Psalms 5:5, God hates iniquity. He hates. Exodus 34:14, God gets jealous. Genesis 6:6, God can become sad. Romans 8:31, God is patient. If God exhibits these behaviors, does it not seem reasonable that those with the divine nature will exhibit similar behaviors? We could also expect that God is not like anything on earth. There is nothing on earth like God except man in his image and likeness. Genesis 1:26. This refers to his mental image, his mental likeness, such as reasoning, innovating, predicting, creating, and decision-making. This is what makes us godlike in God's image. Reasoning, innovating, predicting, creating, decision-making. Therefore, here are the qualities that I would see of the divine nature of the little flock. Once they are glorified, they will be light. They will have a self-perpetuating energy. They will be death-proof. They will be part of a divine family with other immortals. They will be a new creation in heavens, having experienced sin and death and have learned a great deal. They will be initiators of innovations. They will have nothing human about their nature. Stop perpetuating your humanness, because you're going to leave it all behind. The immortal ones, they are the ones who produce the works that do not burn. They are the ones whose character purifies under the fire. They are the ones who are given that special nature. Now, what else do we know about heaven and it's in our future home? Heaven is the residence of God. Heaven is seeing God face to face. Have you ever thought, what would you see God? What would you say to God when you meet him? I think about that once in a while. You got some expression that you'd like to say? I think I would be speechless. What would you say to God when you meet him face to face? Heaven is where God rules the universe. Heaven contains the 24 thrones around a central throne, suggesting an organization. Heaven also has the Lamb. He is there, Revelation 5:6. Heaven contains many angelic beings, Revelation 4:7. Heaven also has some form of music, unlike our music. It's not the same. Our music needs air and needs needs waves in air. They don't have any air in heaven. It's a whole different musical experience, but music. Heaven has a language that is distinct from any known human language, 1 Corinthians 13:1. Heaven has no need for sleep. The divine ones will live 24 hours a day, every day, on and on, no need for sleep. Heaven is reunion. This is a very attractive prospect. Reunion, what a wonderful prospect. I can't wait for a reunion. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of people. People that I've known and people that I haven't known. For example, I can't wait to meet my Italian compatriot Cornelius. I want to congratulate him for being the first Gentile convert. I can't wait to meet the Apostle Paul to tell him how much he has inspired me. I can't wait to find out about how the Urim and the Thummim really worked. There's a question about how did it really work. I can't wait to ask Peter if he was crucified upside down. I can't wait to ask Thomas if he was the young Hebrew that was in India. That's recorded right now in India. There was a young Hebrew that came in and talked about brotherhood. I can't wait to ask John the Revelator how he escaped from the boiling oil. I got a lot of questions. Reunion is going to be a long time for me, and I can't wait to get there. Friends, we have a tremendous and awesome opportunity that's ours to be a part of that tremendous class, the little flock. To be immortal is a great prospect. You want immortality, God will give it to you. But give him what he wants. Amen.